So where's the LeBret Meaty Farm?
Yeah, the,
right up the hill?
Yeah, as mm-hmm. a matter of fact, it still is there, you know, mm-hmm. like to an extent. But I know I had an uncle who was one of the, you know, farms up there, and you know, I'm not sure about the removal part of it, but I know some Métis people wanted to, you know, have the opportunity to farm and that type of thing. You know, mm-hmm. and, like I understand that there was actually quite a large community at LeBret one time, you know, when you mm-hmm. look down, if you go back in the valley towards the, I guess it'd be the west, the north, well, I guess it'd be the west side of Catepa Lake, there was actually mm-hmm. a substantial Métis community there, yeah. you know, and I know my aunt was telling me about that, and but actually not that many of my direct relatives were involved in that move to mm-hmm. Green Lake like that, you know, like that wasn't, I don't know if that was, you know, like, you know, I'm not really, I don't, you know, like, I don't really know all that much about mm-hmm. that particular mm-hmm. Part of it would be interesting to see. Like I would tend to think that the government would have much more difficulty manipulating in some ways, would have more difficulty manipulating Métis people because they didn't have the control over them in the sense of being on reserve. And
that's true, yeah.
But at the same time, a lot of those Métis people were obviously poor, you know, like...
Yeah, and they were in a weaker position because, in a way, because they had no guaranteed status of any kind, right?
Yeah, but I think that, you know, given the economic disadvantages and dependency mm-hmm. and that type of thing, I would think that that would probably be a way of the government... you know, like, I mean, if some people wanted to get out of that, you know, mm-hmm. and people did want to, you know, like, made a lot of the Métis people historically were very progressive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and,
yeah.
and you know, like, I think that was one of, that's one of the features, perhaps, that distinguished them, you know, that the desire, I guess you might say, to be part of, you know, occupation and that type of thing, you know, to progress. And, so that might have been part of it. I haven't really heard much about how it was done or anything like that, but I would, you know, having not heard a lot of stories of coercion, you know, like, that probably even might have been behind it.
You know. Mm-hmm. When we were interrupted, before that you were sort of explaining what you saw was important for this college, and what about the future? How do you see the future of this college of Native non-Native relations?
Well, that's a good question.
It's kind of big. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I think, as I was mentioning, I think the college now is at the stage where it has to deal with a lot of the basic issues, problems facing Indian people, has to overcome them. Mm-hmm. But hopefully it has more potential to grow beyond that, you know, to mm-hmm. to be a quality institution with, you know, where academics, you know, can, you know, teach, research and teach mm-hmm. and publish and be as recognized nationally as, you know, people from other institutions can be as sort of a center, you know, mm-hmm. drawing indigenous people, mm-hmm. Aboriginal people from Canada and, you know, like mm-hmm. across the world. I think there's a need there. In terms of the long term, I know it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because there seems to be sort of two different forces pulling at mm-hmm. at Native people right now. One is what's going on nationally with this post-Meech Lake depression and all that kind of stuff, and the Allaire Report and Quebec separatism. There's this push towards decentralization, which is, you know, threatening to...
it's a form of termination, right?
Well, it balkanizes the country, and, you know, like, a lot of the support which Indian people get out here is because of the federal presence.
Yeah, that's their standing, right?
Yeah. But I think at the same time that if Indian people can take advantage of that rather than seeing it as simply a destructive force, you know, like, use it and... turn it around, so to speak, you know, like, I think there are, you know, like, ways in which that could prove to be a benefit. For example, you know, if authority is being decentralized to you know, to the people, and so, you know, mm-hmm. like, in a very ideal type of way, well, you know, like, that could be It could mean more self-government for Indians.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a two-edged sword. You know, like you
yeah,
know, maybe you may get more power, but you might not get the economic help that
exactly.
goes along with it.
Yeah. Because the province will now say, no, we can't take that up from if the feds pull
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
I can see Grant Devine saying, okay, yeah, we'll come up with
yeah.
with whatever.
Yeah. But you know, it's interesting, you know, when you look at Indian people, it's like the Mongols in China or the,
mm-hmm.
the Aztecs, you know, like
mm-hmm.
they came from being pastoral nomadic people to, you know, to,
yeah.
You know, by adopting and infiltrating, so to speak,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the,
yeah.
You know, the societies, you know, they be, you know, like through their adaptability, you know, and through
mm-hmm.
their own wits and
mm-hmm.
and all that type of thing, you know, like they progress. I think that, you know, Indian people have, they come from small communities, they, have a sense of identity and a sense of differentness, and you know, if they could adapt what society has to offer, at the same time not losing what's important to them. You know, like I think that they could provide direction for society.
Yes, I think so too, and I think that's where the future is. And I think that maybe people in Europe are more aware of that than here, even.
Mm-hmm.
Because we found that, or more and more people find that the way we've gone about things, that's a dead road. That's not leading anywhere except death and
mm-hmm.
destruction.
Mm-hmm.
So people are getting frantic. And
yeah.
Some of them, a lot of them think, oh yeah, we can solve it, there's science.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's going to solve anything, it's going to create more and more problems. And the wisdom that Native people have to share will certainly be a help.
Yeah.
If dominant society, say, is mature enough to listen to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there, you know, like changes like that take place over decades, eh? And,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
But I think a lot of it. I think Native people have to be allowed to sort of find this, you know, like, and supported in that, you know, like, I think as long as mainstream society, like, just a lot of sentiment towards saying that Native culture isn't worth anything, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
Native people aren't worth anything, and therefore it's still not worth recognizing that separatism or supporting it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, by continuing on the policies that they are. I mean, they're simply going to produce, you know, an impoverished class of people who don't have any strong sense of,
mm-hmm.
of direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like I think that you know, the you know, if you take a look at the original treaty agreements, I mean, you know, the idea was that the two groups would live together peacefully and harmoniously, and
mm-hmm.
Would aid each other, and you know, if you know, I think rather than making Indian people bitter about the situation and their place in society, you know, like I think that, you know, Native people should be allowed to be different.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but I think in a positive way. I mean, like not just to go and drink downtown and do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's I think is unacceptable to, you know, to Indian elders as it is
yeah,
to
I
anybody
think
else.
what is happening there is that a lot of well, mainstream may look at natives downtown because they're visible, drinking or doing drugs or whatever, and that is seen as being Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing is that quite a few Indians start believing that too.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's you get the same in Germany or elsewhere. I lived in Kiel at the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Where there was prostitution and a lot of drinking, the same thing,
yeah.
the same symptoms.
Sure.
Okay, here's an added dimension of racism, but the behavioral patterns are the same and the problems are the same.
Well, that's
and
defeated people.
One shouldn't get confused and say this is Indian, this is poverty, this is street life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean those are defeated people, and I think a lot of Indian people have been beaten down so long.
Oh
yeah. They have that.
Yes. Oh, I understand why this happens.
Yeah.
Oh sure. If I play this or parts of that to students in Germany, is there something you want to say to them?
Well, I think that you know, it's always been of interest to me that people generally, you know, come from similar, I think when you look underneath everything, you know, similar cultural roots. And I think when, you know, I was used to trying to figure out why anthropologists came over here, and, you know, I did a bit of research looking at books and trying to figure that out. And, you notice that European archaeologists, you know, like would dig in Europe as they do here, but they somehow had lost the interpretation, the meaning of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like they could see the artifacts and all that type of thing, but they didn't have the contact to what the original society really was. Mm-hmm. And so they sent anthropologists over here to study, you know, the primitive societies here and elsewhere in the world, and that would, you know, provide that answer.
Yeah,
and, but you know, I think you know, there are cultural things there which are instructive to everyone. You know, like
yeah.
You know, like, and that's I think that's the point, is that you know, the horizons, you know, like for European people, you know, to see that, you know, much as we've been forced in a sense to understand, you know, like what European society is, and so, you know, the modern age. The same way, I think, you know, those people have to understand
mm-hmm.
the other side of it. And I know, you know, we're all human beings, and we're all in the same boat. And you know, it's you know, we have to, you know, like Indian people were great. You know, really emphasized survival was a very important, fundamental thing to Indian people. And you know, they, I think, believed in living with the basics. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you know, that's something which I think people have to look at again, is survival,
yeah.
And what you know, like, you know, what have we sort of done today, which you know, when you look at it, really, it's
yeah.
been quite crazy. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, like you say, you know, like you know, I think a lot of Indian people may see what's going on. They sense that, you know, it's, you know, leaving man to dominate things to the extent that he does is not going to be healthy. You know, like it's, you know, it's going to need to, you know, there's just something there, I guess, which, you know, like, you know, man is going to destroy himself, I guess, in a way. And,
yeah.
I know some people, though, you know, it's like, Christianity is interesting from that perspective, you know, that in many ways it almost sort of assumes that, you know, like this world is going to go kaput, which maybe it is, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that, you know, maybe that, I don't know if that's the point of existence or not, you know, but I mean, you know, the thing is, why do we have to, you know, why
yeah.
do we have to dig ourselves in? I mean, like...
yeah, but like you said, I think Christianity also has a lot to do with it. The attitude, go out and sort of, I don't know what the word is in English, macht euch die Erde untertan, subjugate the world or colonize the world. And there's something in the Bible, to go out and toil the soil and stuff like that. So there's an imperative to go out there and master nature almost.
Mm. Yeah.
I thought that is part of Christianity.
Yeah.
That's the right way.
Yeah, well, there's a different relationship with with God, I think.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, Aboriginal peoples, I think, you know, tend to not be as you know, like, we're afraid of having such a personal relationship with God. I think, you know,
mm-hmm.
they, you know, tend to you know, to relate through the spirits, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that type of thing, of, you know, and which brought in the whole environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that type
mm-hmm.
of thing, and you know, the respect and all that type of thing,
yeah.
which was necessary in that relationship. Whereas with, I think, Judeo-Christianity, I guess it is, you know, like there seemed to be, you know, God sort of seemed, like you say, you know, God sort of seemed to be telling them, well,
yeah.
you know,
and
do
it's
this
a very
and do
much
that.
A hierarchical, linear relationship, I think. Whereas, I don't know, but what I hear and read and learn from native people, it's all around.
Well, I think that my feeling about the Bible and that type of thing is, I think that European societies have really twisted and contorted that and used it for all sorts of evils, which really have nothing when you look at the Bible. I don't think the Bible really tells. I don't think the Bible or Christ tells people to do anything like that.
No, Christ certainly doesn't.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But certainly.
Churches have tied in with the rulers.
Well, I think that's. Yeah, well, I think that's a good example of people taking spiritual beliefs and powers and really using them, you know, to subjugate for their own evil purposes.
You know,
and,
yeah. Thank you. Anything else that you want to add?
No, not really, except that it's enjoyable interview and. I hope that you've enjoyed your visit here.
Absolutely.
You know,
actually, I